Simon, great to have you once again here. It's been a brilliant couple of days so far. Can you go out with a bang in Victoria?
Michael, I'm hoping so. Look, the results thus far have been very pleasing. Make no mistake, as we said before the sale started, my aim is to try and get a very, very high clearance rate because that means that the vendors and the buyers have been able to meet happily in the middle. And we're sitting around about 86, 87%. And by the time we knock over a few more private sales, we'll be getting pretty close to 90%. Day three, there's still some outstanding horses to go through. We conclude the premier session and then roll into the showcase session, which is a session where the horses tend to make a little less money, but there's still some very good racehorses to come out of it.
It's almost been a fairy tale farewell from the Victorian auctioneering ranks for you, because you were the man who dropped the hammer on the record breaker, just the second $1 million lot to have ever gone through the ring. This was how you did it. $1.1 million. How much of a thrill did that give you, Simon?
It was a big thrill. It was lovely to sell a horse for $1 million. It was great to sell for a couple of my very best clients in Robert Crabtree and Philip Campbell. Look, I'd love to have seen the horse make more money, naturally enough. But look, it was delightful because the reserve was miles below that. I know that Robert Crabtree was very keen to sell the horse, but he put a very sensible reserve on the horse, and it was great to be able to get past that. Once you've gone past your reserve as an auctioneer, then you can actually start to enjoy the actual sale. So getting to the reserve is the first part of the challenge, but after that you can enjoy it. So, you know, when you get to the seven-figure mark, I was pretty pleased, for sure, and delighted for the team that owned the horse and presented the horse.
You'll be doing a lot more of those $1 million sales at the Easter English sales coming up in a few weeks' time. But just on that sale there, you gave the RSN listeners a little bit of a, I won't say a firm tip, but it was certainly a very interesting comment that you made when we were talking with Philip at Blue Gum, and we mentioned that lot, and you said, well, look, there are some experts out there who say it could be one of the top, maybe a sale topper. So you obviously knew that that was going to be one of the horses of the sale prior.
He was probably the horse that I thought would top the sale. You always get some surprises, and there were some great surprises yesterday. Nothing that actually topped the broke the $1 million barrier, but there's been some wonderful sales. But I think probably my estimate would have been that he was probably going to be the most likely horse, because I knew what a lovely horse he was. I knew that there'd been great interest in him since he'd been down here at the complex. Philip had told me that there'd been good activity in the repository, which is where the intending buyers go and get the x-rays checked. So, look, I think I probably had a bit of a heads-up that he was going to be close, but I had no idea at that sort of money.
When you've got James Harron in one corner, Coolmore in the other, how much of a glint in the eye do you get as the auctioneer about what could unfold?
Well, you're hoping that it's going to happen that way. I mean, you never really do know, because you never know when somebody is going to pull out. And they don't often bid from the same spots each time. So,
could you tell that they were going head-to-head?
I could only see James, to be honest. I could see James Harron. I didn't know that Coolmore were on the horse. I was more intent of just sort of watching the spotters that were spotting the bids for me. So you're sort of very, you're obviously aware of where you are in the marketplace when you're selling something like that. The last thing in the world you want to do is get terribly tongue-tied, so you're more inclined to just keep making sure that everything's flowing okay and that you're picking up every single bit as it comes out.
Well, it's been a remarkable couple of days. Today is the final day, and you're a professional through and through, and you do have the Easter sale to go, but being a Victorian and dropping the hammer for the final time here, have you started to think about that?
Look, it's not something that I've dwelt on. My intent right from the word go with this sale was to make sure that it was successful. Obviously, we work very much as a team. It's a team based both in Melbourne and in Sydney with Inglis, and we've worked very closely with all of the vendors. So whilst it's going to be a little bit sad from a professional viewpoint of being the time where I stopped selling for Inglis in Melbourne, I still want to see the sale finish off with an absolute bang. So that will be nothing to do with me. It'll just be to do with the fact that the vendors have had a good sale, and that's what's most important for me.
Do you remember your very first sale, the very first horse that you went through the ring with?
No, I actually don't. I think it was a long, long time ago. It was probably around about, my guess would be perhaps around about 1980, when David Coles invited me to go up and sell. I do know that I can still recall the nerves that I had, but strangely enough, it's probably like any footballer or athlete or something like that. You know, the minute you start stopping the, when the nerves cease, you know you're actually probably getting.
Do you still get nervous?
I still get nervous now. I got probably, I certainly was as nervous when I sold at Classic, because we hadn't sold for 12 months, and that's the longest break, the longest spell that I've ever had, because the gap from Premier 2020 to Classic 2021 was an 11 month break. So I was pretty nervous then, but very nervous for Premier as well.
What is your pre-sale ritual? Right now, we're an hour and 20 minutes away from where you open up the last day of the sale. So what's your pre-ritual?
The first thing I would do is we get daily updates of pedigree changes. So the first thing I would do for every lot that I'm selling today, just go through and check the pedigrees and make sure that there's nothing that has occurred in the last 24 hours that needs to be announced. Then you try and get around and speak to your vendors and see how they're travelling. Just ask them what the interest is in their horses, so you get a bit of an estimate as to where you might be going. We also, when I look at the horses, you try and put a bit of a ballpark figure on them, so that if there happens to be a delay in the vendor coming up to the back of the box, you know roughly where you should be, you know, calling for an opening bid. Other than that, you just try and relax a little bit. I've got to do a few introductions, so I'll write out a script that sort of involves, you know, thanking everybody and alerting people to the conditions of sale and all the normal things, that obviously the COVID restrictions and the distancing. So little things like that. So at the end of the day, I look forward to getting up there and selling the first lot, because once you've got the first one under your belt, you know that the day has started, albeit that the first hour is usually the toughest.
It's such a specialist role and such an important role, and it's probably a skill set that's undervalued in general society, because not anyone can just jump up there and start yelling out numbers and trying to get the best price for a horse especially. Have we got junior auctioneers coming through? Is there a pathway?
I think it is very, very important that we have got that pathway. The way that we sell horses in Australia is different to the way probably anything else is sold. It's not the way that we sell real estate. It's certainly not the way that we sell stock, you know, cattle and sheep. It's done in a different format again, and things like prized art and things like that are sold in a different way. So the way that we sell is different. We give each one of these horses approximately 90 to 100 seconds in the ring for 3 years of work. So it's, you know, you've got to be on your game. When it comes to young people coming through, every single young person that comes through the system at Inglis is given an opportunity to investigate their desires to auctioneer. Some sit back and think that they would like to do it, and when they stand up, they perhaps haven't got the voice or the inclination. Others sit back and say, look, I don't ever want to really do it. So we're always trying to bleed and blood new auctioneers into the system. Not everybody wants to do it. So, you know, we are always looking.
Was it a passion you always had as a young person to become an auctioneer, or did you fall into it?
Well, to be honest with you, my interest in the industry before I got involved with Coles Brothers was more in racing. I was more a young punter, and probably from a young kid, all I ever wanted to do was be a race broadcaster, a race caller.
Did you try calling?
I've never done it. I've done phantom calls, but I've never done a real call. Going back to those days, I could remember walking around where people would be singing songs I'd be calling races with my favourite horses in them, but I've never actually sat down and done it. I remember having long conversations with people like Ron Papps back in Adelaide about how easy or how difficult it was. And I think to the average man in the street, it looks particularly difficult. You listen to these guys calling now, and you know, whether it's a Matt Hill or Johnny Tapp or any of these sort of people historically, you know, Bill Collins, they seem to make it such an art form. Mm. They were wonderful. They painted a picture so brilliantly that I'm probably very pleased that I didn't have a crack at it, because I would have failed, I think.
And have you got the next phase sorted out? You take some time off, no doubt, but do you know what you want to do? Because you're far too young to retire and just put the feet on the couch for good.
Well, I've said that I'm not going to go home and just grow tomatoes, but I certainly have every intention of just doing a bit more travel. Look, I've got three grandchildren who are great kids, but I want to spend a bit more time with them and watching them go through their sport and things like that. I've got a couple of kids as well, and my wife and I just want to be able to get away. So the first part of it will just be catching my breath, you know, breathing a bit of fresh air, try and help out where I possibly can around the industry. I've got most of the people that we would consider to be clients of Inglis, I would consider them to be more like friends. I've been working with them very closely for many, many years, and I really enjoy their company, not only just talking horses, but also just mixing socially. So I'd like to be able to do a bit more of that. Most of the farms are all of the farms are very welcoming, and some even would tolerate us sort of staying there. So it might be a bit of a tour of duty and staying overnight and abusing the hospitality.
You've sold so many. Do you actually have any shares of of horses?
I've got little bits and pieces. I part own a filly that's with Andrew Noblett called Godeline, who goes, she's been quite a handy little filly, and I'm involved in a share with Hancock's Bloodstock. It was a yearling that we sold at the online auction back in May or June of 2020, the old Melbourne Gold Sale, which we couldn't conduct. And I had to... I really liked this filly. I liked her so much that I actually had to take a share in her, so I did that. And that was wonderful. It was a great opportunity for me to be able to go and take a small interest in this filly. So she's a Magnus filly with Hancock's Bloodstock. So we're looking forward to seeing her. Her half relation went through the ring yesterday and made 300 grand, so that was nice.
All right. Well, the excitement, the emotion inside the ring is like nothing else, and our very own Gareth Hall captured it magnificently yesterday with Luke Simpson, who sold lot 299. It was a done deal colt out of Ruby Falls, and Glen Tree Thoroughbreds over in New Zealand. Have a snippet to Luke Simpson and the emotion that he had after this horse made over $500,000.
550,000, how about that for a result?
Yeah, that's mind-blowing. There's a lot of work that's gone into that, and you have to get a result like that.
And it is emotional, mate, because as you pointed out, 2.5 years of making sure this colt does what he did today.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure that goes into it, and to keep in one piece and to get a result like that is fantastic.
And what were you expecting?
Oh, we're hoping there's going to be sort of 200 there for him, and to double that and more is just, it's mind-blowing.
It's just magic, that, when you hear the passion and the emotion for Luke Simpson, who, for his start, it is life-changing. What's that like? Because you're a dream maker when you're up there.
Look, we in the days leading up to us a yearling sale, we're walking around and speaking to all of these vendors, and they are all on tenterhooks, every one of them. They've gone and put their heart and soul into this, and where a farm like Glen Tree is owned by Bruce Wilson, but Luke and his team do the legwork on these horses over that period of time. And they're actually nursing them through. There's so many little things that can go wrong. You know, we do have horses that have even come to the sale and had to be withdrawn on the sale day because they've kicked a wall and they're lame or something like that. So the relief that must come when you put an expensive colt through that's been very popular and finding that the market responds in a way that exceeds your expectations would be absolutely mind-blowing. I know how emotional. I spoke to Philip Campbell the night of the $1.1 million yearling, and he was almost the same as Luke. I think it's a mixture of relief and absolute joy, pride, and every one of those emotions comes out at the one time. So that's one of the great things about this business is, we talk about the highs and the lows. It is a business that has its highs and lows, but the highs, when they occur, are just sensational.
Are you going to miss it?
I'll absolutely miss it, but I'll also appreciate the fact that I've got that little bit more time on my hands. It's not one of those, you don't walk away from doing what I've been doing for 44 years and loving every minute of it and saying, look, I'm pleased to be doing it. But I think the timing is right. I think I've made the comment before that both Peter Hegney and Ian Baird told me that when they retired, they felt that they left it a 5 years too long, and I took that advice on board. So I'm going to sort of make, hopefully we'll go out on a winner with a great sale, and I hope that the vendors walk away having a great sale and look forward to the future.
Well, so far it has been a great sale. 35 lots have sold for $300,000 or more, which is double the amount of the entire sale last year, and you've still got 60 of lot of book one to go through today. What are the highlights today?
Look, I think there's a few highlights. I probably haven't got the list with me, Michael, that would actually give us the absolute stars. There's some really, really high quality horses that are going to be going through the ring. Look, I think probably, look, there's going to be some surprises in the showcase session. Look, I think the there's a deep field Caliente that I think will sell very well. A Territory's copy of Blue Gums, I think, will be very popular as well. Street Boss Charlton Dancer, I think, is another one of Blue Gum Farms horses that I think will be very popular. But again, there's some outstanding horses that will come from the showcase session. That will become an opportunity for people that haven't got the $200,000 and $300,000. There's going to be horses sold in there for $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, and $40,000 that'll ultimately become pretty good race horses. So look, they're probably the highlights. As I said, I want to maintain that very high clearance rate. The buyers have been fantastic. The Victorian trainers and the interstate trainers have been outstanding. Great support internationally, so I'm very happy.
Simon, we'll look forward to you doing your unbelievable job up at Sydney for the Easter sales. But as you drop the hammer on your Victorian career, congratulations. And from a Victorian racing and breeding perspective, you've been an icon, just like your predecessor, Peter Hegney, who we recently farewelled as well. So congratulations on an amazing career. Look forward to some more long lunches in the future.
Thank you, Michael.
Simon Vivian joining us on the last day that he will be dropping the hammer here at the Inglis Premier Sale in Victoria. Quick break on the other side of this. Matty Stewart's news.